When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Man, there was one day on my way to work. I think, what is that? Like, is it an Irish show, Scottish show, Dairy Girls?
Yeah, Irish, Northern Ireland or whatever.
Okay, yeah. I think I was watching like a handful of episodes of that. I was driving into work and I like broke into an Irish accent that was perfect. And I was like, holy freaking mothballs, Batman. I can do an Irish accent perfectly. And I was like, this is going to be amazing. Like, I
can bust this out.
I don't know. It's like, I'm going to be able to, I'm going to be able to do like D&D campaigns or something or characters. Like, I can now do an Irish accent. Like, and it was like one of these things where I was like, has this just been in my brain forever? Like, we have Irish heritage.
Yeah.
So it's like, which is like, does that play a role in anything at all?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Your accent has nothing to do with your blood, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. A predisposition to be, I don't know. So anyway, but then I lost it and I've never been able to find it again.
For a brief moment, you knew the name of Ireland.
Yes, I did. For like a spell.
For a spell. That was like when we did the Lenovo thing. And they were like, you're going to have to do like a Yoda voice. And I was like, excuse me, what now? And it was just like, well, yeah, we're going to point a camera at you in a room of like 50 people. And you're going to have to do a Yoda impression like 10 times in a row. Sound good? It's like, I don't know what makes you think I can do it, but okay. And then it was like, the moment came and it was like, Jay, you just have to be Yoda right now. And it was like, and then I could do it. And I'm not sure I could quite do it as well ever since. But like in the moment, I felt like that was really good. I did it, man.
I did it. Not so bad. Not so bad. I know. Yeah, that was such a whirlwind of a day. And I mean, that was like one of those moments too where I was like, oh my gosh, Jay's being so put on the spot right now. I was like, don't let the attention shift to me. Don't let the attention shift to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, did that make you like feel sick with nerves, or were you okay?
I remember at the very least they had told us a day in advance that I was gonna have to do it. So I remember just like I was taking a shower later that day, and I just stood in the shower for like half an hour doing the Yoda voice like over and over and over. Like you gotta do something, man. You gotta practice it.
Right. Okay. You need to be able to bring it.
There was this like there's this hrumph sound he does like. That was my entry sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Right.
No, that's I think that when trying to break into accent of some kind, like there's like a phrase or word or something that people use that sort of like gets them like the cadence, the rhythm, which I suspect is what I had that day with my Ireland thing that I just then like whatever it was, I just lost it. But
yeah.
No, you did a great job though.
Well,
I was very proud of you. Yeah. Put on the spot and proud display. I mean, this is the thing, like going back to like childhood plays. Like I got to be the lead in a couple of plays when I was a kid in elementary school and stuff. But like for the most part, you weren't acting. You were just saying words loudly.
Yeah,
like,
right. It was the fact that you memorized the lines at all was all there was to it.
I think this is literally what has like broken me a little bit in terms like as I got older towards like ever wanting to do like drama or like be a part of like that program or something was sort of this belief that like it's like I don't know how to act. All I've ever done is just memorize the words and said them all, like when it was my turn to say them.
Right.
You know,
and go.
And looking back on it too, it's like you probably could have just like messed up and like everybody just would have thought it was like adorable and cute and people probably would have just felt more bad for you than like upset that you ruined their show.
Yeah. Turns out the stakes for a second grade performance of the Candy Cane Kid versus Bubblegum Bart, not very high.
Not very high.
Yeah.
I think it had like 13 lines too. So like it really, it's
and
like,
that was the lead role.
That was the lead role and it was not that many.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did do it. What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I've been in all 200 of them so far.
What? Air gun noises. pretty unbelievable. I can't believe we are 200 episodes in.
200!
That's so many episodes.
It really is. I cannot believe it. It seems like it has flown by. You know, there have been some little decades in there that seemed like they took forever, and I was just like, I can't believe we're still in the 150s. Like, are we ever getting out of here? And then it was like, boom, we're flying. We're at 200.
No, I know. I mean, this is the mantra of parenthood. It's like the days are long, the years are short. And I feel like that's exactly how doing the pop has been. Like, in my mind, a lot of times I will like go to bring up a story. I'm like, no, I think we talked about that like in episode 17. Like, yeah. And it's like that was like years ago.
Probably
it's like,
you could use a refresher.
It's probably safe or okay to revisit a topic or a story that we've once discussed in the past. However, you know, it all feels so recent. But anyway, thank you guys so much for being along for the ride with us. It has been such a hootin' and hollering good time.
It sure has been. In fact, to celebrate, why don't we have a corny joke?
What?
I know.
What is today? All right, lay it on me. Yep.
All right. Are you ready, Ben?
Yep, I'm ready.
Why can't you hear a pterodactyl going to the bathroom?
I think I know the answer. Is it because the pee is silent?
The pee is silent.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. That's so good. I was like, I never know these. And I was like,
pterodactyl.
I know it.
It's because the pee is silent.
That's a really, really good one.
All right. A good also, quality joke. Down in the comments right now, do you remember the movie The Land Before Time?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. About Littlefoot and the sharp tooths and the long necks and all that stuff. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So everyone right now has to go in the comments and write down how old you were when you realized that Sarah, the Triceratops's name, was Sarah because she was a Triceratops.
Yeah. Literally, I learned last week.
Yeah, right.
Like that recently. Never in a million years. Because it's like, out of all the names, they're also like quirky and fun, and then there's Sarah, and there's nothing wrong with the name Sarah at all. It's just out of a lineup of dinosaurs, you know, you're sort of like, well surely there was something else, you know, that they could have
come up with. Sarah sounds so common. I want to say one of them was like Petrie as well.
Petrie
is the pterodactyl, but I think like just the way you say Petrie is like, it's like you pronounce the P, it's like Petrie, like Petit. Whereas like pterodactyl is spelled with a silent P and then the T.
Yes.
So I always thought like, are they trying to do something there? Are they like making fun of the silent P by calling him Petrie? Like where you just pronounce the P and the T.
Right. And it feels like it. It feels like that's exactly what they're going for. But otherwise it sounds so similar to, and I mean, I have no idea where Jurassic Park and Land Before Time.
Yeah.
Like lined up with my own viewing experience or comprehension of the story. But like Petri dish feels like the type of thing you may have like taken the blood from the mosquito in Jurassic Park would have then used for like the cloning with frog DNA or whatever to create dinosaurs in the present. So like Petri just seems like such a scientific word.
Yeah, it also does. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's been your rationale for his name the whole time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So as like a 5-year old, I was like, oh, Petri, like Petri dish. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, there it is.
A word I totally knew what it was because I went to chemistry camp.
Yeah. I think for the Sarah, the Triceratops, I remember it like whenever I like realize that's the name or whatever I like think about that character, I always remember like when I first realized that, and it was like as ever, like way after the fact, like
more recently than last week,
but like as a teenager or something.
Okay.
But it's like there, I remember there being this like mental rundown in my head of being like, oh, Sarah was called Sarah because of Triceratops. And then there was this like panic that like, okay, wait a minute, have I embarrassed myself by not knowing this information? As far as anyone knows, I knew this information the entire time. That's what we're going to go with. I knew this immediately as a child and it was obvious. Okay. Right. No one knows I didn't know. Cool. We're good.
Right. Yeah. Now I got to replay every conversation I've ever had about this.
Land Before Time. Yeah.
This is also one of those things though, where I would say that like I could park the extremely goofy movie in a similar, you know, lot, so to speak.
Oh, okay.
Where I would say like, this was a movie that clearly we purchased, we had the VHS, we wore it out, you know, like it just like lived and breathed in our house. And so in my mind, this was a part of all kids around our ages, like upbringing, and they all watch these films. And like The Land Before Time is one of those that I don't feel like, since being a little kid, I've never had any impulse to go back and rewatch it. I've never really seen other people talking about it. And I would even go so far as to say, I barely remember the characters' names at all if we hadn't discussed it like on a call a couple of, like last week or something. So it's like talking about it right now. I'm like, is this like the most unrelatable discussion ever?
Oh yeah, people are like, what is The Land Before Time?
It's like, I never remember it. I watched Dinosaur.
No one watched Dinosaur, first of all. People will blame The Emperor's New Groove for ending the Disney Renaissance. False. It is the movie Dinosaur. It, like, if you're like, wait a minute, I've never even heard of that. Exactly. Like, it was Disney's first stab at a fully computer animated movie, and it features dinosaurs, as you might imagine. There's even a ride at Animal Kingdom that you can ride for the very near future. And then it's going away because, one, it is weirdly scary.
It is pretty terrifying.
Two, extremely bumpy and not super comfortable. And three, just like no one knows what dinosaur is. Like, you could be waiting in line and just be like, it's so cool they made a dinosaur themed ride for Animal Kingdom, but like, what's it have to do with Disney? Never mind, they made a whole, it's based around a whole movie. So yeah, Dinosaur, terrible movie. The real fall of the Disney Renaissance, you ask me.
Well, and what's interesting about this, because the other big discussion that we had in a movie that has eluded both you and I for years and years and years,
don't say it.
Am I going to do it wrong?
It's fine. It's just we're just going to be outed. You
know? Oh yeah, I know we are. Yeah, we're about to do that exact thing. This has been like on our idea board for a video for a very long time for Super Carlin Brothers, but it's just like the movie Treasure Planet.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it either. People say, like, people who I trust who are like, it is a great movie. It's like one of these things, like, we're very frequently, like, on the weekends, like, I'll plop down with Allie and like we'll be like looking for something to watch, and like it's sort of like, should I watch Treasure Planet tonight? Like, and I am so sure at this point in time. Like, this is one of those things where, I would place Doctor Who in a similar column where it's like, for whatever reason, I have this haziness, this hesitance to, like, give it an honest shot.
Right.
And I'm like, there's no way in the world all of these people love it and it's not amazing. Which means that, like, I am missing out on getting to watch something for the very first time.
Do you feel like your the expectation for you to like it has been set so high that you'll be like, nervous watching it that you don't like it enough or something?
I have no idea, because like one of the things that I feel like I was doing early on, and I think it was reflected in a lot of our review scores when it came to like watching new fandom related movies and doing a review here on the Super Carlin Brothers channel, is that like I feel like every time something new came out, it was always like I felt like a responsibility to find the ways to love it, even if I watched it and was sort of like, I don't know. Like, it was almost like I was trying to understand more what the outside perspective of the film would be rather than what my own personal perspective of the film even was.
Like if you thought the outside perspective was going to be negative, like you were trying to be like more favorable and like, there are still ways in which you can enjoy it.
Right. Like, let me attempt to find where it persevered, where it actually did a good job,
right?
Versus, you know, like maybe being like harsher. And then I think somewhere along the way, it was kind of like, I sort of started to like go out of the theater experience and be like, Ben, sometimes when you leave the movie theater, you are like enamored with every second of every frame that you just saw. And I can go back to like my examples of that. Like the ones I always hail back to is The Force Awakens and Infinity War, which were just two movies that like from the word go to end, I just loved them.
Yeah.
Like when I was in the theater, it was like, I was like eating popcorn. I was like enthralled. It was just sort of like, this is awesome. Like it's funny. It's cool. It's like, they're doing like the right balance of everything. I just loved it. And it's like, that is my completely, like, you can disagree with me and that's completely fine, because it's like, when it comes down to it, I was the one in the seat. I was the one enjoying the experience, and that's all that really matters. Like,
right.
It's sort of like, you can disagree with me and have completely valid reasons of your own. But like, this was something I had to have eventually enough faith in myself to where, like, when I watched a movie, to like step away from it and be like, I don't think I loved it. You know, like I don't think I would, like, I walked out. I wasn't entertained. I didn't think about it. Like there wasn't a whole lot that I'm able to go back to.
Yeah.
But like that, I think took me a long time. So I feel like if you watch my review scores, I feel like you'd watch them sort of like kind of fall off of a cliff a little bit, where like I feel like in the beginning it was like, for me to go like sub 85 out of 100 on anything was unheard of. It was like 85 would be me being like highly critical, and then like eventually then it was
suddenly
like
suddenly it was like, no, never mind.
It was like no, never mind, you can give something a 43.
Yeah,
you know,
if you don't like something, just trash it. Just that, there is like a certain thing where like you're the one giving the review, and like conceivably people could be watching and forming their opinions based on like the things you say about it, but then it's like there's like this self-conscious feeling of like, well, do I just need to like, how much of what I'm doing is like just giving my honest opinion versus like what if my honest opinion doesn't match the greater critical like perception of this film, and then I'm seen as like a fraud or something?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, and that's,
I'm trying to guess what the reception will be and form my opinions based on that. Not like, which is a ridiculous stance to take, because like you, as someone who forms the opinion, who's doing the review and who lots of people will watch, you might help. Like, whatever your honest opinion is okay, because certainly other people are going to have enjoyed it in the way you did, or unenjoyed it in the way you did.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. And I feel like I bore witness to this a little bit following the ending of Game of Thrones, where I feel like there was a bunch of people I've seen like discussion kind of follow around. And this could, Game of Thrones ending could completely end up being like Star Wars prequels eventually, where like at some point in time, people are going to be like, no, like they had a point. Like you see what they were doing? Like this made sense for these reasons. Like, we didn't appreciate it at the time because it's not what we wanted to see, but like eventually, whatever. So that could be, you know, 20 years in the future, this whole fragment of the podcast may age incredibly poorly. But anyway, I remember the few days following, there was like these people who I saw like attempting to be like, no, it was amazing. Like everybody else is not understanding like the brilliance of what they pulled off here. And I was like, I didn't like it. You know, like it was not what I expected. It was a really strange turn. Like, for these reasons, that reasons, I think this person should have done this. Like, I don't know like what, like why they ended up like going in this unusual direction with it. And like, you know, like whatever. So, but then like, I feel like as time went on, it was sort of one of these things where it seemed like at first there was like a bunch of people who were thinking they were almost having like the like academic interpretation of the final themes of the story and supporting it on that basis. And I feel like as time went on, it was sort of like, no,
yeah.
Like it doesn't real. Like, I like to go back and like try to find some of the people who I had seen make these comments and be like, I remember we talked about it. You said you loved it.
You said you loved it. You said the blue eyes were way back in season two, were a predictor of this thing, and that, you know, you thought it was brilliant. It's like, there wasn't enough buildup. Yeah, I do. There was this weird feeling going around the final season of Game of Thrones where I think, like, as far as, like, three episodes in, like, not a lot had happened. And it's like, this is the final season. And it was like, okay, every week you'd be like, that one was a little shaky, but you know what? Like, I know we're going to end on such a big note that, like, these first three episodes, like, there was just a lot. There's a lot of exposition they got to get out of the way.
Well,
we're just
getting
rid of all that stuff first, and then there's going to be some big battle, and then it's going to be this, and then it's, you know, it's going to be crazy.
Right. But the story taught us patience, I think, in storytelling from like the visual medium, where it was sort of like, it's like, look, sometimes they're going to make you work for it, but the payoff will be worth it.
Right.
And it's like, you have to set up everything. Sometimes it's a little bit closer to like reading a book than it is to like watching a film, where normally when you're watching a TV show, they're trying to keep you entertained. They're trying to give you like cliffhangers. They're trying to give you like, you know, plot. Like if you were to distill out like a lot of, what are they called? Like soap operas, for example. Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's like the basic premise, is that like they can constantly like find a way to like bring about like a new twist, a new like thing to like keep things interesting, a new way to be like, oh, no way, this person's now with that person. Like, what?
What?
Nobody ever saw that coming. And it was just like, they can just constantly sort of like do the same trick over and over and over again. But I feel like what you were witnessing with this was like a slower version, a slower play out. And so I think, yeah, entering the last season of this sort of show that like everybody's eyes seemed to be fixed on, it was kind of like, all right, it'll be worth it. They'll get there. It'll make sense in the end.
Right. It has always worked out in the past, and so it shall be again.
Right. And then, you know, at least as far as the present to this day, it kind of feels like now it just sort of, it feels as though it just sort of tripped at the finish line.
Yeah.
Is kind of what happened.
Yeah, for sure. There definitely is this like a very frustrating at times like situation where like you, it looks there, when people see a movie, there is this like attitude by certain kinds of critics that whatever the masses think, that what they must have the different opinion.
Right.
Like that is how they will set themselves apart from the masses. So it's like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. No, obviously everyone doesn't get it. This movie is bad for all these reasons that only I, the special person, understand.
Right,
and it's
right,
like,
right.
Okay, versus the exact opposite. It could be like 40% mass score. And it's just like, okay, clearly this movie actually struck a chord on things people are not capable of getting because they are not as special as me. And so I will tell them that it's actually good. God, good thing I'm here.
Yep,
it's like,
yep.
There is this like weird complex that develops, and like only like, you know, it seemed like for a long time, like, or well, like there are occasions where like it would all come together. It would just be like, yep, this movie is so unequivocally good that to have said like Toy Story 3 was bad, that would call me the critic out. I can't do it.
Right.
Everyone loved it and it was good and they were right. Okay. We're all on the same page on this one.
Right.
You
yep,
know, but
yep.
whatever.
Yep. No. So anyway, yeah, I mean, going back to those early days and sort of back to my original point was like, yeah, I do think that there was like a certain amount of like the review process where it was like, I don't know if I was like trusting myself enough or like willing to give myself enough like credit, because like at the end of the day, we're not filmmakers. Like we don't understand films from like a technical perspective. We don't
right.
like, we don't pay as much attention necessarily like to the aspect ratio that's being used or like what that says about like, you know, what you're witnessing or how it relates to like cinema at large. You know, we're like much more like lore based, and it's
yeah.
sort of like on some level it's sort of like that must mean that like if we focus on lore, I understand that like from like a super critical like, you know, technical standpoint, it may not be like the most like vital factor in determining the quality of a film, or it's not taking enough of the factors of an overall film.
Right.
But it is what we focus on.
Right.
And therefore it's like at this point in time, it's almost like I might just need to trust myself enough to be like, you know what? If the lore doesn't line up properly, then it doesn't give you the positive viewing experience that you're looking for. Like if you're going to establish like an in-world rule, you want to keep by that rule and you want that rule to make sense always.
Right. If there's glaring and gaping plot holes, then it's hard to focus on how great the cinematography was.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's probably like one of those things where it's like, you know, I mean, everything is subjective when it comes to your enjoyment of anything. If you enjoyed it, that's all that matters. Like,
yeah.
then good. Like there's nothing better than you as an individual finding something that you like, but we also know that not all things, all people like
right.
it just doesn't work that way. So anyway, but yeah, so back to Treasure Planet, which I again have not seen. I think that it's the type of thing where I don't think I have such high expectations. Like I'd go in, I would give it an honest go. At this point in time, I do believe it will be good on the basis of all of the prevailing opinions that have ever come my way. Like I would say most people either have not seen it or love it. Are like the two stances I've seen. It's like, oh my God, I never saw that one. It's like, it's because it exists during that same phase of Disney releases that included Atlantis like, and Emperor's
Bolt
New Groove.
And Bolt. Dinosaur.
Yeah. I did try to watch Bolt and I did get bored. And I know that that's one that has like a high Rotten Tomato score. And I'm like, it must get better.
Yeah, at like, some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't seen Bolt either. So
yeah, yeah.
Not the section of Disney's past that I am the most familiar with, despite what we do for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's always interesting.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all-time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see. But you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
Oh, but you know what? This feels like a good transition into some Wicks of the Peak.
Heyo!
I don't know if you have any, but I have been busy watching all sorts of stuff over here.
I saw your list, and your list for your Wick of the Peak, which is supposed to be a thing, is like a paragraph.
I know. I was just like, every week I was like, I'm just gonna, you know what? I can't believe how many things I'm watching at the moment. So I can read them all off if you want, but this is like for things that like I'm the one that like blew my mind recently was the live action show for One Piece,
which is we're familiar with the TikTok content creator Straw Hat Goofy, and I believe that the aforementioned Straw Hat,
yeah,
is a reference to a character from One Piece.
Yeah, so okay. The character in question is Straw Hat Luffy.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I didn't even realize how close.
I know. Yeah, I'm like Straw Hat Goofy. I'm like, oh, that's so fun. The Straw Hat is a reference to One Piece and the fact that the main character wears a Straw Hat or something. Not even realizing that Goofy rhymes with Luffy.
Got it.
The main character's name. I'm like, okay, all right. That is okay. It is a better. It's a your name is even better.
Right.
But so. Like the anime itself is like over 1,000 episodes deep, you know.
Right.
It has
right.
been going on for a long time. It is a super popular, like long running anime. And it's like it's one of those things where like if you're into like any amount of like nerd culture at all, there's simply no avoiding the imagery of One Piece a little bit.
Right.
Like certainly even like you have seen Luffy, the guy with the straw hat, he sort of has a crazy look in his eyes and black hair and the red vest and the jean denim joggers, you know?
Okay.
And like, I've seen that character so many times. And like, I've heard people talk about One Piece, a card game recently came out where people have been playing it and stuff. But like, I had literally like that is as much as I knew.
Right.
I knew that there was an anime called One Piece and that the guy with the straw hat was the main character. Like that's it.
Right.
You know, which is surprising. I would almost say given like how like prevalent and popular the show is in general, but like, so the live action just came out on Netflix and just going through like TikTok, every now and then I would come across like the algorithm would feed me like a clip from the show.
Okay.
And I wouldn't even know what it was at the beginning. Like I'd just be watching and be like, what is this from? And like on the three or four occasions that it happened, I would just be so drawn in and it was just like, whatever this show is looks freaking awesome. Like it's, and then I finally realized like it was One Piece and I was like, okay, well, TikTok is doing its job, but this isn't even One Piece advertising. It's just other people posting clips of the show. And I was like, I'm going to give the first episode a try. I have no idea what it's about still other than these, a few clips I've seen, but I fired it up on Netflix and learned for the first time that One Piece is an anime about pirates.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, it's about pirates. Okay. And then it's like, it starts off and there's this back story and it's about, there's this guy, Gold Roger, who was the legendary pirate king and he achieved all you could want in life. And he had the biggest treasure of them all, but he'd been caught by the Marines and he was being publicly executed. And his final laugh was that there's this giant crowd that's come to see Gold Roger be executed because he's so beloved and so rich and wealthy. And he just announces to everyone that he hid his treasure somewhere out there for anyone to go find, and that's like his final words. And it's like, oh, and so then they kill him, but it starts this like Age of the Pirates because everyone wants to go find his treasure.
Okay,
so that's what happens. That's the setup for the show, and the treasure itself is called the One Piece, hence the title. So everyone's searching for the One Piece or whatever, and that's basically what Luffy is searching for, the One Piece. But so I'm watching, I'm like, okay, cool, awesome. And then Luffy shows up and they start having a fight, and everything in the show, there's so many shots where you can tell it's taken directly from the anime. The characters look ridiculous, but it's in this like whimsical, charming like way. Everything's so stylized, but like you know why it's stylized, and like it all plays by the same rules of the world it's taking place in, and it just works really well.
That's awesome.
Which is super fun. But then, you know, he gets into like his first fight or whatever.
Yep.
And suddenly Luffy just like, it turns out he's just made of rubber. And he just has like stretchy arms, like Mr. Fantastic or something.
Okay.
And I know. And I was like, what is happening on this show all of a sudden? How is it that I have made it this far and been this adjacent to this property and did not realize that it is an anime treasure hunt about superpower pirates? Like, how do I not know that at all?
I've got nothing for you. Cause I'm in the exact same boat. Like this is like one of those things where like you kept dropping new bits of information and I was literally like, my jaw was like comically dropping as you kept like including like, oh, it's about pirates. Oh, okay. And there's a treasure. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, and he has stretchy arms. Okay.
Yeah.
Just like, and it works.
And it works unbelievably well. The further I got into it, Luffy, the character, I freaking love him. The actor does such a good job. He's like Ted. I mean, honestly, it reminds me a lot of Ted Lasso in that he just sort of like is so optimistic at all times. And it's like he keeps running into these characters that have all these like demons in their past. And it's just like he just believes in their dreams so hard that like everyone's better for knowing Luffy.
Oh, I love that.
But of course, then you're like, what's in your history, Luffy? Like, what happened to you?
Right.
And it's like, you know, he gets a lot of background screen time and you're like, oh, poor Luffy. You know, you've had some demons to conquer yourself here. But like in the meantime, it's just fun watching the whole team together and they're all got such wild personalities and they're all hilarious. And I would just super duper recommend the live action One Piece, which I want to say it's only 8 episodes long. I think that covers about 60 episodes of anime.
Wow.
So I know anime. I mean, that was one of those things when you're watching, like if you ever watched like Dragon Ball or something, like Goku versus Frieza takes like 20 episodes or something. It's just like, this fight has lasted way too long.
Right. You know, right, yep,
because yep. It also took 20 episodes of Frieza beating up Goku's friends just for Goku to get there. You know,
it's like come on, like,
get there already, to the fight.
I can't imagine going like how often does an anime usually come on, like is it like as frequently as daily?
I think it's like once a week. I can't imagine
like getting through like half a year and being like,
dude,
okay,
we gotta get to the end of this fight already, man. Like, throw the spirit bomb at him already. It's been 4 episodes. But anyway, I digress. The point is, even if you know nothing about the One Piece anime, even if you don't like anime, I think you would like the live action One Piece, and I cannot wait for the second season. I thought the first one was amazing, and it was just really fun. So that's my wick of the peak.
It does make me wonder whether or not, and I have no idea why, but I feel like pirates in general, as sort of like a collective sort of like infatuation, almost feels like it's like on this like rise. Like I feel like it's not even the first time in the past couple of weeks where something pirate related has almost like simmered to the surface.
Yeah.
And I don't know if like, you know, I mean, speaking of like Game of Thrones and stuff like that, like, I don't know if like we've lived through like a really big, like medieval time or, like even like, you know, Alice, you know, sort of at one point in time introduced me to like, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Bridgerton and, you know, like a lot of these like period piece related, like phenoms that have sort of like caught fire and become super popular. And like, you've seen like a whole bunch of different, like, you know, outreaching arms sort of like,
yeah,
like building up that concept. Like, you know, we grew up in the early 2000s during the release of like the Pirates of the Caribbean films. And it felt like during that period of time, pirates came like real big again. Like they became, yeah, like super prominent once again and very like in vogue. And then like they've sort of dipped out. But like everything, it's almost just like a wheel. It's like you're just sort of like waiting for it to like come back around again. And so something, this is me just speaking with no other basis. I don't have that much to go on. I'm just like, are pirates about to be like back in? Is this about to be like another, you know, like I feel like pirates versus ninjas, was that like a thing for a while? Dude, or something?
My entire background with pirates versus ninjas is that in the early days of Facebook, pre like even maybe newsfeed,
okay,
I think like there you could like add, or maybe just around the time like newsfeed became like a thing or your timeline or whatever you want to call it. You could like add apps to your profile page.
Yeah.
And like, they were wild and wacky. And eventually it was like, I would almost like judge people. If I scroll down someone's Facebook page and they had like 50 apps on there, I was like, you gotta rein it in, friend. This is, this is too many apps. I remember having a whole conversation with someone once and I was telling them, you gotta like call this. And they were like, maybe I can consider getting rid of like maybe these two or something, but I don't know. Like these are all pretty important to me. And I was like, dude, there's no way. Incorrect.
I have two funny stories about this. And I would say the first one was that during my college days at school, there was this like aquarium maintenance game that you could play.
Yes.
Do you remember this?
I do.
So circa probably 2010 for me. And like, I remember I became like super obsessed with it. And it was like one of these things where like you would gain points or credits or in-game currency or whatever by showing up at all the dedicated times and like making sure to like feed your fish and like wipe down the glass and like, you know, yeah, like clean the tank and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then you could like gain points additionally by like how many like invites you sent to your specific friends, and you could do like up to 20 a day. And so like this was like, I mean, it was getting me, yeah, so
you could
bad.
Like you could like visit your friends' tanks, and if you cleaned them for them, you get extra points and stuff like that. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And I remember this game because I was also right there with you on it.
I know. I was so obsessed with it. And I think at some point in time what I realized was that back on older computers, and I mean maybe you can still do this, I don't really know, but like the plug-in or the multimedia player or like whatever delivered this game to Facebook was not so sophisticated that it could account for you changing the date and time on your computer.
Oh.
And so it was using your computer's information to determine how much time had passed since your last like visit to your, you know, to your tank.
So you were like, start hacking it.
So I basically started hacking it by going through, and I would change the time to like yesterday, and then I would fast forward it back to present time, and like my tank would be like fully dirty again, so I could clean it again,
yeah,
and like feed my fish again. And then it was just like I would like literally sit there like on my laptop in college in bed doing nothing but just like going back and forth, like,
yeah, like gaining points,
gaining like hundreds of days of cleaning ability.
And I forget exactly like what dictated whether or not you were like further ahead of someone else in the game.
I think you could unlock new species of fish,
new species
that
of
you
fish,
could that you,
yeah,
could put in your tank,
yeah,
and some of them were like so far along, like a mandarin goby, for example. A mandarin goby, if you've never seen a picture of one before, like it doesn't look like nature could create such a color scheme. Like it is one of the most gorgeous, like individual, just like naturally occurring specimens, in my personal opinion. And like, even with like selling aquariums, like I can't tell you the number of people who set up tanks because they saw the mandarin goby and they wanted a place to house one themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like unlocking the mandarin goby as like a fish to have like prominently displayed in your aquarium was an achievement of sorts.
Oh my gosh, of course. What I specifically remember about two things about that game in particular, because I was not hacking it to go back and forth and travel through time or whatever.
Right.
But like, I do remember going back and mathing out exactly, like, because you could like breed the fish and then like sell them.
Yeah.
And I remember like figuring out which fish was the most like valuable to sell versus like the time it took to get the fish. Because like, if you made them breed, it would take like, oh, this one takes like 7 hours to make a new fish and this one takes like 12 days or something or whatever.
Right.
You know, so sometimes you had to like really go on the clock or whatever. But I think it was clownfish or something. So I remember that like I was just like farming them so that you could sell all the offspring and get tons of currency that way.
Nice.
And I remember doing that. But I remember the other person who played this regularly with us was our cousin Mike.
Yep.
And absolutely. I remember like just constantly being like baffled that like, because I was on it, you know, I would get in, yeah, about not, I wasn't like hacking the system or anything, but I was making sure I was doing all the things every single day. I got sucked in so hard to it. And I would always go to Mike's tank and he was like, he remained like the same number of days ahead of me, no matter what. Like, yes. It was like, I could not believe, like, I'm putting so much effort in that, like, I am positive at some point you were going to just miss a day or miss something or just forget about it. And I will like surpass you. And it just never happened.
It was like
Mike is so on top of it. I cannot believe as on top of it as I am, so is he. And I can't believe it. And it's like, it was just baffling to me. And it's like, maybe this is part of that Weinman family line. It's just like ridiculous dedication to something stupid.
I know. Yeah. That's coming from our mom's side of the family where this cousin comes from as well. So our shared heritage on that front.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're exactly right. Cause I think I remember this was, and I think it's hilarious that you found the best strategy and I found out how to hack it.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to break the system because, you know, this isn't working for me. So, but I do remember I felt like there was this like, I was like, I cannot believe how effective this app is at getting me to do exactly what it wants me to do. Because like, I have not been like, I've talked about this before, like I've been off social media now for a year and a half. But prior to that, like even as a consumer of social media, it was very, very, very infrequent that I would, like or comment on things, because it was almost like I was aware of the optics associated with it. And it was sort of always like, you know, it was always just like, well, if I like this photo, then like, what will that say to everybody else who realizes that I've liked that photo? As if everybody's paying attention to the photos I've liked.
Yeah.
But it was always in the back of my mind. So I was extremely like aware of like what my like digital presence was like. And, but like, this goes back long before that. And it was like, I was going through and I had like my 20 people each day that I was willing to send the game invite to.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, it was like, I know that I'm blowing up your feed right now and it like I'm justifying it because I care that much.
Right.
Like, yeah. I'm going to win. This has got me sucked in. It's on. And so I was like, I was doing everything you were capable of doing every day, which I always found to be absolutely hilarious. And so to mark that story dead, moving forward, the other one that I found to be really, really, really funny was we went through this stage sort of like as cell phones were becoming a bit more prominent, you know, as like a like an everyday carry type of object. And even just sort of like with texting sort of growing in prominence, where like when I remember when they first started advertising texting, like a common text plan for a month might be like 100 messages to 250 messages, which like, I'm sure anybody, if you were to see how many text messages you send daily, you know, like I suspect lots of people would blow right past that.
Yeah.
Because in the early days, it almost seemed like texting was much more like paging somebody. Like you might just say like, are you there?
Right.
You know, and like, yes. Like, and the idea was sort of like, if you had a family member who was traveling, you know, to a different city for a conference, like you might not call when you arrive, but it might be like, hey, did you make it? Yes. And that was the discussion. Like then, you know, you person at home knew that the like fellow person you cared about successfully made it to where they were supposed to go. No more information necessary.
Didn't need to go through an entire phone call. I only need one bit of information. Yeah. Right. I think this is twofold because in the early days of cell phones, the main people who had them were like adults.
Yes.
And like they were accustomed to calling everyone for everything. And so it was like, it just wasn't the way they were used to communicating. And then on top of that, the way in which you texted back then was with the 9 number pad system. So you had to like really think about how to text and like, I have to press 5 3 times, wait for it, 6, you know, just like to spell anything out was like a bit of an effort if you weren't used to it.
Yeah.
But then like the slowly as they became more available and more like younger and younger people got them and they got them and like weren't used to having access to a phone all the time and like texting became faster and because they just learned how to do the thumb typing really quick on the 9 pad, it was like boom, you could go so much faster. And that I feel like as those people got older, it really exploded.
Exactly. And I think for me, that was exactly what was like unfolding. So like, you know, bringing your cell phone to the dinner table for the most part, like mom and dad didn't really have any like major rules against that because it was sort of like, what, you're not going to take a phone call in the middle of dinner. Like that was obviously like prohibited or like whatever, like, you know, if somebody called your house phone, there was really nothing you could do about it. But like, it seemed like your own phone. It was sort of like if somebody's calling you during dinner, you just like waited.
Right.
But like, because texting was still so on like the forefront, the idea of like busting your phone out, and like sitting there having a conversation with a friend while you're at the dinner table. Like, I don't even think people knew how to like police against it because it was still so like new. Like it didn't, I don't even know that like super occurred to mom and dad at first that you would bring your phone to the table and therefore like might engage in a conversation with somebody in the same way that like if like we talked about like AOL Instant Messenger, the same way if you're sitting on your keyboard or something and like having a chat back and forth with somebody. Yeah. But that was slowly on the rise, and I in particular I think really started texting a lot. I think that like at one point in time I sent like, I want to say it was like 20,000 text messages in 1 month.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was like an absurdly high number. I was just like absolutely like addicted to it. And it was sort of like the thing where it was like the little dopamine hit that I feel like sometimes you get from like scrolling social media. It's like at any point somebody texted me. Like, I'm like, good, somebody wants to talk. That's
exactly.
Awesome. Like,
yeah.
You know? So all throughout the day, every day, it was just sort of like a constant dialogue with, you know, a few people or something. And as that started to become a problem, mom and dad started to notice and they were sort of like, yeah, no phones at the table, or like, you need to put your phone down. And the hilarious irony of the situation was the eventual state where these apps started to become so prominent through Facebook. And our dad at the time, being like this local newscaster, actually had a kind of large following on Facebook because he was this like public figure. And I think for a period of time, it was like his followership or something was like actually even capped. Like
because
it wasn't followers. It was just friends.
Yeah, it was just friends. I think it was like 5. You couldn't have more than like 5,000 friends or something, which almost no one was ever hitting the cap because that's just so many people.
Right.
But like this was before like public figures might have had pages or something.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep,
so
pre-pages.
Now
so,
it's not a problem. But yes.
I do remember it was like funny. Like, you know, we'd be like grilling burgers or something, and it would almost be like a game for dad to be like, I'm going to go post a picture of the burgers. And, you know, like, we'd be like sitting there like through dinner or whatever and being like, oh my God, it's got 50 likes. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
you know, and it was, and it was, I mean, it was just so weird to like watch it unfold. But hilariously, because dad sort of all of a sudden, like as a public figure and sort of like doing whatever, like was getting this like quick outreach, and he was a pretty fast adopter of like the concept. He also inevitably found himself downloading one of the games, which was, I think, like Farmville.
Or,
yeah.
A little more traditional. I think what we were playing was just a different version of Farmville, effectively.
For all intents and purposes, like, you know, in Farmville, what you would do is you'd have like your little farm and you'd have a set amount of currency and you could go and plant like fields of corn. And then like, you know, 3 days later, your corn would be ready to harvest. And if you went and harvested it, you could sell it and buy more seeds, and then you could plant more stuff and have a bigger farm. And
rinse, repeat forever.
Rinse, repeat forever. Basically, like, it never ends and it's always fun. But it, like our dad, who I would say for the most part, like growing up, like didn't ever really super, you know, get like, I think he would occasionally play Mario Kart with us or something, but it never really seemed like video games was like his like thing. But at somewhere along the way, like after being told for, you know, a few years at this point, like, Ben, no texting at the table, no texting at the table. We're going to go put your phone away, like, right, whatever. It was sort of like all of a sudden Dad was like, well, I have to harvest my corn.
Right. You know, hold on. Yeah.
And it was this like hilarious, like, what?
What?
It was,
yeah,
like,
I've been sucked into the farm bill, haven't you?
Yep, yep. So, but it was, I think it was a fairly brief phase in the scheme of things, but it was really, really funny to, like, watch it, like, 180 in such a hilarious and, like, unimportant way.
Yes, yeah.
So anyway, sorry, Dad, to out you as a Farmville player.
There you go. Once upon a time.
Some amazing high scores.
We were all
there.
Yeah.
But Dad, who kind of, like, grew up, you know, on similar to a farm, you know, I could see where it would be like it would hold some additional appeal.
I mean, yeah. So anyway, it all dates back to Pirate versus Ninjas.
Oh yeah,
when
sorry.
when all those apps were like sort of like first emerging, it was like, to my understanding, at least my experience, it was the first app that achieved like widespread popularity in like a common way.
Okay.
And it was just, you just downloaded it it was the most basic thing in the freaking world. You just downloaded it and it was just called Pirates versus Ninjas. And you just chose whether or not you were on Team Pirates or Team Ninja. And then those two teams were in competition across the entire website of Facebook.
Oh, wow. Man, this is like tickling the faintest ends of my memory. But like, I literally, like, I would say I barely remember this.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, you just choose which side you were on. And then just every single person I knew's profile included the app Pirates vs. Ninja and which team you were on. And just periodically, one side would gain more followers than the other. And that was the whole, it wasn't a game you could even interact with. There wasn't anything you do to like get the ninjas more points or the pirates more points. It was just, are you on the team that's winning at the moment? Are you Team Pirate or Team Ninja?
Wow.
And it was, I don't know what it was about putting those two specific things against each other or like what it tickled in everyone's brain, or if it was just like the first fun thing that was different on Facebook that wasn't just like posting pictures and comments and stuff, but it definitely caught fire. And as far as I know, that's sort of the origin point between Pirates versus Ninjas.
Okay.
But,
okay. Yeah. Like, this is like one of those things too, though. It's so funny because like it's interesting to see something introduced to the world, the ways in which we thought it would be used in the very beginning and the ways that it would ultimately evolve over time based on like what actually ended up like being important to people or like what things like could be fun at first, but like ultimately like once you've done it once, you've done it a million times and like therefore like it's just sort of like fizzled and it's like, well, you know, I mean, it was fun the first time we did it, but like I mean, we don't have to keep one of these going. Like, it's not like we have like Pirates versus Ninjas 2023.
No,
like,
yeah.
As like, you know, something that everybody is actively engaged in. I bet it exists out there somewhere.
I'm sure it does. Yeah. But so that one is sort of the first one. And then there's, you know, there's a bazillion offshoots where, I mean, if you wanted to, you could be on, you know, Team Batman versus Superman or Team, you know, clowns versus jugglers or something. I don't know.
Right.
But like,
right.
You know, it's like, okay, Pirates versus Ninjas was cool. Now there's like 50 other ones and it's just like, it's not as cool anymore.
Yeah. It kind of like dilutes the field a little bit. Yeah. So that's very interesting. But so it's actually a perfect segue though, like for the other thing that you and I have going on. So to zoom out of like the, like, you know, early 2000s more to the modern era, you and I are about to engage in like sort of a grand experiment for the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that, like, which is TikTok essentially. TikTok,
you've heard of it.
You've heard of it, no doubt. TikTok is obviously, I'm sure, doesn't need any introduction whatsoever, but it's a platform that, like, for us to do, you know, the job that we do, it's something that we're like rather vacant on. We've done a handful of them in the past. We've tried to, like, to sort of like take some of our content, turn it into like a TikTokable, like we shoot it in TikTok formats. We like write a script specifically for the TikTok. So it's not just like clipping our current theories, you know, into something else. It's like a dedicated, dedicated production. And the ones that we've done in the past have done, you know, reasonably well, and, you know, like we have like a following, I think somewhere in the proximity of like 250,000 followers, I don't think we've regularly posted to it at all for 6 months plus. Like, it's sort of just like a here and there. Occasionally we're like, we'll be like, hey, we should make one, and we'll do it and we'll post it, and then we'll all have fun watching to see like what it does or how it does. And that's it.
That's sort of it. Yeah, it'll be like, even if it does extremely well, it'd be like, oh my gosh, well, I think we had one that's gotten like that, that got like 8 million views or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, this is insane. It, you know, you'd think that would motivate us to be like, let's do more. Let's try and keep the train rolling. It was like, man, that one did really well. That's so cool. Well, all right.
Yep.
Guess we'll just get right off TikTok.
That was it. No, I think we posted a few follow-ups, but we immediately did that thing where it was sort of like, we uploaded something, we got like a basis for like what success looked like, and then we uploaded like a few more, and it was like, you know, clearly what had happened was we got real lucky on our first one, and it just sort of like went, and then the ones that we did after were doing extremely well, but by comparison, less good, mm-hmm. and it was sort of like, eh, oh well. You know, if we're not going to hit the, it's like,
if it's not going to be 8 million every time, what's the point?
Right. It's like beginner's luck, basically just like completely diffusing any interest in like doing, you know, it's like going out and like playing golf, swinging it for the first time, miraculously hitting a hole in one and then being disappointed every other time it hits you like four.
Yeah. Right.
it's like, well, dude, the first time was sort of like, I mean, that's not like really
a fluke. Yeah.
So anyway, I feel like the saga that like I invite you to attend along with us is basically just we have decided to like to stop paying so much attention to like, you know, how this one does versus that one, like whatever. We're just going to go through and for the last 90 days of the year 2023, we're starting again at about 250,000 followers. We're just going to upload one of our theories rehashed into TikTok format every single day for the end of 2023 and just sort of be like, how did it do?
How did it do?
Like, what happened?
We gave TikTok a real solid try, okay?
Yes, yeah. It's
and
like,
then, we'll see how it does.
It'll either work and become something, or we can like walk away from it and sort of be like, all right.
Yeah. Welcome to 2024. We're TikTokers now. That's it.
That's it now. Yeah. The giant leap from one thing to the next. But so
leap no one's doing. I mean, we go to all these other events and all the TikTokers are like, how do you get on YouTube, man? What do you do?
I know. Yeah. It is really, really funny. And it's so wild because, like, you know, you look at YouTube and near as we can tell, it seems like longer form content. It's almost like if you're a fan of short form content, then you've probably left the platform and are now using TikTok because it has short form content. And then it's sort of like, as we make more long form content on YouTube, it's almost like the things that are now even longer tend to do even better.
Right.
And it's like clearly what has happened is people who like short form went to this platform. People who like long form are still here and want even longer form.
Right.
So it's very interesting to see sort of like the evolution as time goes on, sort of like where and how these like media consumer behaviors and habits are like are shifting underneath us just actively.
Yeah.
You know, which I don't suspect is likely to stop happening anytime in the near future.
Yeah. Unlikely.
Just going to keep going. So anyway, if you don't already follow us on TikTok and you would like to see just the whole bunch of stuff over the next 3 months, then we got just the thing for you. So
we sure do at
Super Carlin Brothers.
Yeah, give us a follow. Thanks in advance.
There we go.
The other thing you can go follow us on is we just launched our brand new podcast, which if you're listening to this one, hey, great news. We have another podcast.
We do.
It's called Through the Gryffindor, an idea we actually talked about for the first time on this show.
We did, yeah. yep. Doing sort of like the chapter by chapter read through, which honestly has been really of the entire Harry Potter saga. So it's been pretty cool so far. We've got the first three episodes are officially live
as we're recording this one, and then we've recorded the fourth one.
Yep, we've recorded the fourth one. So it's been really interesting because like our big thing about this one, like when we like the pop sort of like we usually would like you know an episode to be about an hour, but like coming into the Through the Gryffindor concept, we were like chapter by chapter, we've got like it's like it's just as long as we have things to say. You know, so it's like it can be long, short, you know, like it'll just like the chapter or the episode length will be about as long as we have something to talk about.
Right.
And we got through the first two episodes and both of them cleared an hour and we were like, okay. Like apparently we have a lot to say. I feel like third and fourth have tapered down just a little bit. So
a smidge. We'll see. I'm sure we're gonna have like a 2-hour episode at some point.
Inevitably. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
King's Cross, the man with two faces.
Yeah, the man with two faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be there too. That could be a big one.
I'm sure. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, so but no, it's been another cool project because yeah, for whatever reason we decided, and this is like how we're kind of like entering the month of October, is we have our GoFest weekend, which we are doing two separate events for. So GoFest is obviously on October 14th, where we're doing like the live, you know, popcorn culture episode, this show. The night before, we're doing a live trivia event, which you are more than welcome to attend on October 13th at the Granite Theater in Roanoke, Virginia. We've started our new TikTok saga of one TikTok per day for the last 3 months of the year, and a brand new podcast.
Yeah.
It's just like, so it's whatever. Like, why not just absolutely barriers?
It's going to be great. I can't wait.
Do you ever get, okay, I've only recently heard this term, and I don't know how prevailing it is, but The term is the Sunday scaries.
Oh.
Are you familiar with it?
I'm familiar with the Sunday scaries. Yeah, just that like feeling of dread about like the upcoming work week or something.
Yes.
Or not even always work. So sometimes it's just like, I don't, yes, but yes. I
but there's just like a lot on your agenda. Yeah. I feel like yesterday I was having a good old fashioned case of the Sunday scaries because I was like, well, there's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on.
Yeah, including one of the other things I have is I'm going back to the When We Were Young music festival.
Yes.
In Vegas in the middle of October. So we'll get through GoFest weekend, and then I'm going to Vegas for that. And last year I had a lot of fun like putting together like my festival garb, you know, like what my outfit was going to be like. And when I bought that outfit, I was sort of like, well, this would be really cool. Like if I ever do like others of these, I could probably just like wear the same thing. It'll be fine. And then I was like, but now I wore it to this particular event already.
It's kind of a reputation to uphold.
I know. Yeah, yeah.
You can't just phone in a repeat. You know?
I know. Especially my huge win last year, and this was like it happened in like the first hour of being there. Mm-hmm. But there was this one guy that walked up to me, and he just saw my outfit, and he was like, "You what? Oh my gosh!" And then he just walked away, and he's just like, "Only in Vegas." And I was like, "Oh my gosh! I am so proud that I gave somebody a Vegas experience as somebody who is distinctly not from Vegas." But so it has created this standard in my head that I'm now like trying to uphold.
Can you live up to yourself?
I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Mm-hmm. It was just like our TikTok success. Beginner's luck. I just got
beginner's
lucky.
Beginner's luck. You went too hard, too fast.
But over the weekend, I had like this experience that I feel like was monumental in the world that we exist in here in this corner of the internet. But I bought my first ever pair of Chucks.
First pair of Chucks, the Converse.
The Converse. Yes. Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, then let me ask you this, because this is sort of a running theme in your life, is how long have you wanted to buy Converse?
Ooh.
Because this feels like a Ben Carlin finally came up with an excuse to buy something he secretly longed for forever, but was afraid to buy because he didn't have a valid reason.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. 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 So succinct.
Yeah.
Very accurate.
Yeah.
No.
It's only been since 2004. Don't worry.
Yeah. It's no big deal. I've just been mulling it around. Yeah. Just rolling around up there. I used to text people from the dinner table and be like, "Oh, Chucks." No, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't say that it's been that long. This is like one of those things where I see, like, whenever we go to like cons and stuff like that, I've noticed that like there seems to be like Crocs amazingly have entered the fold as a piece of garment that people tend to wear. Doc Martin boots seems like a really common one, sort of like the what am I trying to look for? They're like a real utilitarian looking heavy black boot.
Okay. All right.
You've certainly combat boot is the
combat
word.
Combat boot. Okay. I'm going to look them up. Something comes to mind.
Doc Martens. Yeah. You'll know them when you see them. And then the other that I feel like I see people wearing are the Chucks. And you know, this is always one
of
those things.
The Doc Martin boots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So this is something that like, I have, like, for whatever reason, I've never personally felt like I'd be able to pull them off in the way that lots of people do. Like, it's always seemed like so much more like in keeping with like the personality of the person wearing them or whatever. And I was in a way that is just right. You know, like it's like when it's right, it's right.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like one of those things like where I've never really known like what version of it I would do.
Right. Like you're afraid if you wear them, like someone who's more fitted to wear Converse is like, someone's going to come give you a ticket and be like, I'm sorry, you just take those off, please. Like these, you're doing it. No.
Right. Yeah. It's like you have done this and you know, you clearly like, don't get it. You clearly missed the point.
You're not really one of us.
Right.
So we're going to need those. You've messed up.
Hand over your Converse
hand over
card.
Hand over your Converse right now. Okay, yeah. Those aren't for you.
Right.
Those are for us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I will say the movie I, Robot, Once Upon a Time, there's like Will Smith's character is like all about like all things that are like vintage,
yeah,
or like, you know, kind of hailing back to like the pre-robotics,
yes,
era of,
I do remember,
of humanity. And so like the fact that he like wears them in the, mm-hmm, film is, mm-hmm, like a really cool thing that he's doing. And I will say that like in that moment I was like, nice, that's pretty cool. because it was like it fits so well with like the character that they've like established, you know, for him and everything.
Okay, so you've wanted them since 2002 then, when I, Robot came out, is what I'm seeing.
I would say that was the first time I ever admired them.
I'm sorry, it was 2004. I'm sorry.
So you nailed it the first time.
I nailed it the first time. Yeah, there, yeah, you go. iRobot film.
I would say for a good long period of time, like I was sort of just like comfortable with where they existed in the footwear realm. But anyway, so there was like an aesthetic that I needed to find, and I found the aesthetic that I was looking for, and now I'm just trying to emulate the picture of the guy who wears them like as perfectly as I possibly can.
Okay. I want to say, is it the case that in the movie his Converse are more of like a leather material and less of like the canvas material?
I don't know. I would have thought that they were like the original canvas, because that's like how I think Converse came to be in the first place.
Well, you know what? I'm looking at it now and I still can't tell.
Let me see. Can
you know, that's the one from the movie.
Oh man, yeah, it is really hard to tell from the photo.
Yeah.
But the pair that he's wearing are a pair of black ones, and mine are, the ones that I got are like fully blacked out. So they're
okay,
like black nose, black sole, black.
Oh,
black,
you don't see, so it's not like the traditional like white.
It won't be like the white
it
front.
It won't have the,
yeah,
white,
yeah,
front.
It'll,
okay,
be like fully black the whole,
gotcha,
way through. So we'll see how it goes. I'm excited for it. But it is absolutely one of those things. Like it goes back to like growing out a beard for the first time. It's like, No Shave November, it'll be so fun. Plus I quietly want a beard, so I just want to see if it works.
I will tell you, so my experience with Chucks is that I've never owned them at all. But there was, I remember in high school, the category of people that tended to wear them was, it was basically the entire marching band was like super into like Chuck culture.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Definitely seemed like the band always had them.
Yeah. And I remember just thinking like a lot of times it didn't really, they always just looked like, I always thought it was like, you guys are wearing these more out of like a band, community rather than, I don't know, shoe choice or something, which is totally fine. It, you know, that's totally cool with me. I personally did not like them in high school.
Sure.
I thought they just like looked dumb. But which is to say, I do want some now. But let me just say, I will. My wife now, Beth, was in the band at our high school.
Yes. Yep.
And I remember that she specifically would like broke the mold on the rest of the people in the band by owning a pair of red Chucks.
Oh.
And I always thought like some, like even before I was like interested in dating her, when we were just sort of like friends in English class or whatever, I remember thinking like, she's at least got cool Chucks. Like everyone else is sort of like failing on it, but she's like excelling at it.
She's nailing
it. Yeah. So yeah. Should have known then. Should have known then.
That was the moment. So maybe you and Beth both invented the promposal and the prominence of red Chucks.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you're welcome.
I mean, if you two had not attended high school in 2006, what would our world look like?
What would it look like?
You guys know?
People would just be asking people to prom in these boring ways. Like, hey, do you want to go to prom with me?
That's how I did it every single time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, every single time being like, what, twice? How many proms did you go to?
I went to three.
Wow.
I know.
And did you add, you, so that means, okay, and you asked someone each time?
I asked someone each time.
So you asked someone to go to their prom at another school?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was asked to attend a prom at a different school.
Okay, right. So then you didn't ask that time.
Oh, I didn't ask that time. I asked two out of the three. I thought
okay.
That was what you're asking. Yeah. So
okay.
to both of the proms, my junior and senior year, I asked a date.
Okay.
To both of those.
I was going to say, bold to ask someone from another school to their prom.
No. That one, honestly, it was pretty cool, actually, because I had a big group of friends from a nearby school in our area.
Yeah.
And the guy that was supposed to go with the girl I went with, who was one of my good friends, I think at the last minute he like bailed or something like that. I think he had like already graduated, had like been on board for like going back to a high school prom, and like the last second was like, I'm not doing it, and just decided like that it wasn't worth going or something like that. And so the group of friends have reached out to me and they were like, hey, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, like this girl doesn't have like a date, like would you be able to go like tomorrow?
Oh,
and I like, was like,
I was like, how'd you get a tux?
I wore dad's.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. Which was super cool. I was like, this is like, cause it was really funny.
Out, guys, I got a cummerbund.
I know. Yeah. It had not even occurred to me before that during my high school years, like I had officially like grown into like tall enough to fit into dad's tuxedo.
Yeah, you might have even been too tall.
It may have been a little bit.
But for a day's notice, you know.
I know, but it was like, oh my gosh, this is like so fun.
Yeah.
And I was really excited. And so like when I went there, like one of the cool things they did at that school was like they introed like all the like the seniors. So the girl I was a senior, the girl I was going with the senior. And so like they were introing her and her date, who was me. And I think I got a much more warm welcome at this other school's prom than I even did at my own senior prom.
Oh wow.
Because all my friends, like you and our like the GMA and everybody, had all graduated. Yeah. So I was like the youngest of the bunch, and therefore like when you guys all left, it was sort of like, well, I don't have any friends.
That's it. I'm friendless now.
Well, I still had friends. They were just elsewhere. And they were clearly on Team Pirates while I was on Team Ninja. So yeah, I should have flipped out. Sure. I was obviously on Team Pirates.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I don't know what team I was on back in the day.
It seems like Ninja. Yeah. I can feel it. It's just like oozing out of you.
I want to say I was on Team Ninja. I know Beth would have been on Team Pirates. And I think I remember like talking with her about how we were like, you know, we should switch teams or whatever.
Oh yeah, or, yeah,
you know, she felt like I should switch teams, and I was like, I don't know, ninjas are so cool.
Yeah. I feel like you even wore a bandana for a good stretch of time during this era of like high school and stuff. But like, I almost feel like you were wearing it more in a ninja capacity than a pirate capacity, even though I feel like a pirate can be commonly associated with a bandana.
Yeah, I think you're correct about that.
Yeah, sort of had like the headband vibe going.
Yeah, I did sort of have the headband vibe going on there for a while. That's one of those I look back and I'm like, oh, was that a cool look? I have no idea. In my mind, it was. You know,
absolutely.
But
but
also it was like, it was actually like semi-necessary because we had like the Steve Prefontaine like sort of like mop tops hairstyle.
Oh, yeah,
going. And the problem was I needed to do so. I either needed to get a haircut or I had to basically wear the headband, because the way it would go is like when I would run, the front of my like my bangs would like stab my eyes.
Yes.
So I it was very uncomfortable to not wear something.
Stab me right in the eyes.
Right in the eyes. And if you could imagine every step. So it was it was necessary, not just a visual aesthetic choice.
Well, and you know, sometimes I feel like those are the ones that end up being like it's both utility and also at the same time just kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know, it's like adornments that like don't do anything, they're just adornments. Well, I actually don't have this opinion towards it at all, but I was gonna say it's like the more that it can do, I feel like from like a utilitarian standpoint, it's just like, it's like, oh, that makes it even cooler. It's
right,
like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
I get why they have it.
Right.
But yeah, anyway, so yeah, team pirates,
I guess. All team ninja, you
team
know,
ninja. Yeah, apparently, yeah. Let us know, where do you guys land?
Where do you land? Maybe, team ninja versus pirate.
Maybe for the day of Halloween, we will change all of the tiers over on Patreon from Jazzy J and Buzzy B to ninjas and pirates.
There you go.
See if we get any good shake up towards the end of the month. Speaking of Patreon, we are officially inside of the month of October, which makes me so excited because we have our Q4 quarterly merch already figured out, already established, and it is one of my favorite things that we've done so far. And it comes with a fun digital perk as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We are once again bringing back the D&D theme to close out 2023 with our Q4 merch. We are going to be doing another episode here in office with the team of a D&D campaign that will be completely different from the one that we did last year. So
maybe I'll be a ninja.
Oh, I think you could be. Maybe I'll be a pirate.
Wow. Or if you want to be.
I feel like as long as we're spitballing. the merch that we found to come with it last year, we of course did a dice set. This year we have it's hard to even describe, but it's just like amazingly cool. It's a rocks glass, if you can imagine, so like a small like drinking glass, but like literally like melt embedded into the side of the glass as if it's like almost like as if it got like paused halfway through piercing the side of the glass is a metal D20 embedded. So we'll have a link to it on Patreon, like some pictures and stuff like that, so you can see what it looks like. The glass itself will also have the Popcorn Culture logo laser etched on it, so you'll be able to like, you know, kind of showcase your fandom there, be the perfect accompaniment while you're listening to the new episode.
We'll have a, I think we can probably put an image either on screen as we're talking if you're watching on YouTube, or just go check out the Patreon and we will have an image posted there.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it looks, we have one in office. It is so cool. It is as if while the glass was being forged in its like molten state, someone just took a D20 dice and pitched it as hard as they could, and it got stuck in the side with the 20 facing out perfectly. Who knew? They threw a nat 20, and then it hardened that way perfectly.
Yeah, it's just so really cool. Yeah, like it's not like glued to the side. It's like embedded into the side of the glass. Awesome. So it's really, really neat. I highly encourage you to go and check it out. We'll have pictures like in all the places, and we'll have one posted to the Patreon at like no tier basis, so that like you can get like a feel for what it would look like before you do any signups and stuff. So you can see it without being a patron if you'd like to. Patreon.com/popcornculture. That's going to be at the quarterly merch tier if you want to go and check that out. But otherwise, guys, thank you so much for tuning in for 200 episodes. Until next time,
pop pop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.